Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on The Brian Lehrer Show, a parent's guide to choosing your next public school. Will it be different under de Blasio? How young Democrats are moving to the left. Is it becoming the party of Elizabeth Warren? The life and times of Padma Desai. And Nels Klein today, guitarist for Wilco, on advancing music education. But first, one of the most shocking things about Typhoon Haiyan relief has been China's paltry aid to the Philippines and what it says about China becoming a different kind of superpower than the United States. Jane Perlez joins us now. She's the chief diplomatic correspondent in the Beijing Bureau of the New York Times. Jane, thank you for doing this. Hello from New York today.
Hello to you from Beijing.
So following the typhoon, the Chinese government announced it would give just $100,000 in aid to the Philippines, plus another $100,000 coming from the Chinese Red Cross. Then yesterday, following intense criticism, they increased their offer to $1.4 million. They have the second largest economy in the world, so that's still not very much money in the scheme of things. And considering the devastation and the need in their backyard, how does that $1.4 million compare to what the United States and other countries are offering in aid?
Well, it is quite small, and I think it seems to be based on an initial assessment that relations between China and the Philippines are icy and have been icy for the last year, to say the least. So it seems to have been a calculated political decision somewhere in the foreign ministry that they would not be too generous. And I think also they were watching the sentiment online, where lots of Chinese citizens were saying that they didn't think Philippines was worth very much of Chinese money. So it is, of course, appallingly small compared to other sums by other countries.
And I misspoke when I said they increased their offer to $1.4 million. They increased it by $1.4 million, which makes it a total of $1.6 million. But still, that's about the same as Ireland, the same as Italy, the same as Spain, countries with far smaller economies and global influence. The United States, by contrast, has promised $20 million, plus has sent an aircraft carrier. Britain pledged $16 million, Japan $10 million, New Zealand over $1.7 million, Indonesia $2 million, the Vatican $4 million, the Vatican, very Catholic country, the Philippines, South Korea $5 million. So do you think there's a fundamentally different attitude in China as a rising superpower about the way it approaches its role in the world compared to the United States and its role as superpower?
Oh, I don't know that you can. Yes, I think the two countries are very different. I wouldn't want to draw huge conclusions about how China is going to behave in the world or does behave in the world from what it contributes to a humanitarian disaster. I think the Chinese just have a lot to learn about what we call soft power. They seem to think that if you put up a big sign in Times Square advertising a news agency and you open a lot of Confucius Institutes in various countries where you teach Chinese, that this will go a long way to sort of showing China as a cultural country. As far as this disaster is concerned, China's just never really been a very big giver for humanitarian disasters. They first began in Aceh in 2004. You know, remember, the United States has been doing humanitarian aid for many, many, many decades. China is fairly newly rich, and their first outing was in Aceh, and I remember seeing two red tents with a group of small Chinese medics looking quite forlorn because they didn't quite know what to do in a foreign country. So they have a different approach, I think.
Let's take a phone call, and listeners, if you want to chime in on this or ask Jane Perlez in Beijing a question, 212-433 WNYC, 433-9692. And Anthony in Flatbush, you're on the air. Hi, Anthony.
Morning, guys. Morning, Brian. From the news I've been getting, it seems that China is almost single-handedly funding the redevelopment of sub-Saharan Africa, whereas the West of the Western civilization, as we call it, has not. I mean, maybe they're emphasizing their duty over there more so than, you know, something more abrupt as, say, a natural disaster. Could that make any sense?
Anthony, I think that's a great question. And, Jane, I think when people in this country talk about Chinese investment in Africa, it's more seen as a threat, as a resources grab, than some kind of aid. So how would you sort that out?
Well, I think they're two rather different things. Yes, I think the Chinese are in Africa hunting for minerals and oil and also to some extent for grains. But those are long-term investments. A humanitarian disaster is something else. You know, it's an emergency disaster, and you either and you get used to the idea of giving, I think. And we have seen a change in the Chinese behavior. Earlier this week, it was $100,000 from the government and $100,000 from the Red Cross. I think they got a lot of. They saw they got some pressure from international community, and I think there's a newspaper here called the Global Times, which is actually usually quite right-wing and very nationalistic, and they wrote a couple of editorials and a couple of articles saying that the Chinese were being too stingy. So yesterday they announced a little more. Who knows? By next week they may announce more again. I'm not sure that we can sort of compare long-term resources interests in Africa with emergency humanitarian relief.
Eric in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Eric.
Hey, good morning, Brian. I'm a paramedic in Brooklyn. And my question is, does China have NGOs such as the Red Cross and other agencies separate from the government and separate from that very paltry amount that might be marginally resourced to China?
Jane?
It's a very good question. No, they do not. The Red Cross is a government-run organization here, and I don't know of any private organizations that give money to disasters here within China. You know, a couple of months ago, there was a big earthquake, and it was all government-run relief, and it wasn't very efficiently delivered, and people in Sichuan who were affected by the earthquake were really mad. So it's not only abroad, but it's also at home where I think the Chinese fall short on humanitarian aid, which is, as you rightly point out, is all government run. The idea of philanthropy is not yet, as we understand it, is not yet a big idea in China, which is not to say they don't have rich people who could do it. It's just not as prevalent as in the United States or some other Western countries.
Eric, thank you for your call. Tell us more about that conflict between China and the Philippines over the South China Sea, which some have used to explain their initial poultry aid contribution. What is that conflict about? We've reported on this show, we've talked on this show, about China's conflict with Japan over some islands in the North China Sea. What's happening in the South China Sea?
Well, the Chinese in the last couple of years have claimed that the islands in the South China Sea and all of the sea of the South China Sea is theirs, basically, based on historical line drawn many years ago that nobody else recognizes. So within that line that China claims are some islands that the Philippines claims. And last year, the Chinese basically pushed the Philippines out of one of these small islands and to this day has prevented the Philippines from going into the lagoon of that island called Scarborough Shoal. And in retaliation, the Philippines is taking this case to a United Nations arbitration tribunal. So the blood is very bad.
There was
the
a piece.
Is very bad.
Do you see potential for war of any kind?
Not between the Philippines and China. It would be no contest because the Philippines basically has no military worth talking about. It has virtually the only Navy assets it has are some old rust buckets from the United States. There is a potential of conflict between Japan and China in the East China Sea, but between the Philippines and China, no. It's just a very nasty war of words, and the Chinese being very dominant over the much weaker Philippines.
But on one of those rust buckets, if that's the right word, there was a piece in the New York Times Magazine this past weekend about how the Sierra Madre, a World War II-era ship that ran aground in the middle of this reef area in the sea, becoming the site of a geopolitical struggle that the article says will shape the future of the South China Sea and, to some extent, the rest of the world. Wow.
Wow. What can I say? I'm not sure I would have written those words. I think the conflict between Japan, the potential conflict between Japan and China is really serious because Japan has a serious military. It's the third largest economy in the world, and the bitterness between Japan and China runs very, very deep from Japan's occupation of China during World War II, and even going further back from that.
Jane Perlez, chief diplomatic correspondent in the Beijing Bureau of the New York Times, and Gabriel in Edison. You're on WNYC. Hi, Gabriel.
I'm okay. How are you?
Good. How are you doing today?
Good. When we had the disaster in Haiti, China was the first country to bring aid over here, over there. Although Haiti did not have diplomatic relations with China, they have diplomatic relation with Taiwan, but they were the first one to land over there to bring humanitarian supplies to Haiti.
Jane, are you familiar with that? And Gabriel, thank you. I'm not. China's role in Haiti earthquake relief?
No, I wasn't aware that they were so prominent in Haiti. But if that's the case, I think it certainly points to the fact that the decision in China this week not to aid the Philippines was politically based and not otherwise, which is a pretty horrifying situation, actually. And also, I think that, you know, I think the moderate, you know, many Chinese don't agree with this. I spoke to a professor this morning who said he asked his class at one of the universities in Beijing about aid to the Philippines, and they said that China should be as generous as possible, and they thought that the amount given earlier in the week was really embarrassingly low. So let's see. I wouldn't be surprised, in fact, if the Chinese came up with some more money and more aid in the coming week or so. It does look terrible from a public relations point of view, but the IKEA furniture company, which Chinese consumers now love to go and shop in, has given more to the typhoon relief in the Philippines than China. IKEA has given more than $2 million. So that shows up the Chinese to be really mean.
And I just looked up China, Haiti, earthquake relief, and here's an article from Voice of America, of all places, in January of 2010, and it says China is rushing relief supplies and aid workers to quake-stricken Haiti, even in the absence of diplomatic relations between the two countries. It was about $1 million. It says the lack of official ties between Beijing and Port-au-Prince is not standing in the way. The Chinese foreign ministry spokeswoman at the time says no matter where Chinese citizens are overseas, they are and will, in her words, spare no effort to protect their safety. So she seemed to peg it to protecting some Chinese people in Haiti, for what that's worth. They sent a 60-member search and rescue team to Haiti at the time, this says, and the Chinese Red Cross was donating $1 million in emergency aid. So just to put a little more meat on the bones of Gabriel's call. You know, I was in China last year on a tour for journalists, including one of your New York Times colleagues and others. And part of the conversation among foreign policy hands there was about China as a rising superpower and whether it has any interest, or maybe it's kind of a political maturation process, interest in being an ethical and humanitarian standard setter, like the United States has tried to be. Now, in the United States, you know, we have this great tension in foreign policy between trying to be a standard bearer and just pursuing our own interests no matter what. It's a great tension. The sense I got from people I spoke to in China last year was that that tension doesn't even exist yet, as they're trying to figure out if they want to establish part of their international reputation on being generous, on being ethical, on being a model in any way. Does that ring true as a conversation people are having in the Chinese leadership?
Oh, if you know someone who knows what's going on in the Chinese leadership, please let me know. I was just at a dinner this evening with some of the most experienced ambassadors here in Beijing, and I think they don't know what goes on in the senior leadership. I think it's very difficult to know. But in the general discussion among people, in the press, on television, I don't think that there's a lot of discussion about China as an ethical leader. I think it's much more a discussion of China as a new power and as a financial power. And when you think about it, it's really quite incredible that, you know, so little aid is going to the Philippines, which is only a two-hour flight away from the southern coast of China.
Yeah.
Haiti is half a world away. So something is going on here, and maybe it was just a very bad decision by some people in the mid-level of the foreign ministry, because this is not going to do China any favors in the rest of Asia, which is where they're trying to actually curry favor.
And compete with the United States, for that matter, for influence.
Exactly.
As well as resources.
Exactly.
One other thing before you go. Do you think the situation in the Philippines and the Chinese response informs what we can expect from China when it comes to leading on climate change? I mean, Southeast Asia has a lot of very populous and very low-lying island nations, Indonesia, the Philippines, Vietnam. We've heard emotional pleas from representatives of the Philippines at global warming conferences, and they don't feel the world is doing enough and that they are extremely at risk. If China is the number one investor in those places, even from a protect your investment standpoint, do you think they'll also be proactive about climate change preparedness in those places as a reaction to this typhoon or in a general sense? I mean, if we can expect more of these storms, do you think China sees a leadership role on mitigating the effects of climate change, even with its coal-intensive domestic energy sector?
Well, I think it's a really good question. I think it's hard to say. I think the Chinese if this is an indicator, I think the Chinese at home within China are trying to develop alternative forms of energy. They're putting a great deal into wind, for example. There's some interest in electric cars. They're certainly aware of their polluting habits and the terrible things that it's doing to their own country. Whether that's going to extend, their interest in that is going to extend into the rest of Southeast Asia, I'm not so sure. At the moment, they are very interested in building dams, which is not very helpful, along the Mekong River and other places to bring energy back into China. They're very interested in digging up, doing gold mining and various other forms of mining in Myanmar. Outside China, I don't see a great concern about climate change, I must say.
Yeah, although maybe concern about staving off revolution from their own ultra-polluted cities is enough of a motivation for change, and much more motivation than flooding their potential investments in the low-lying Philippines. But Jane Perlez,
I think so.
New York Times Beijing diplomatic correspondent. Thank you very much for giving us some time today. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. It was a great pleasure to be on the show.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, a little closer to home, a parent's guide to choosing your next public school. Will it be different under de Blasio? Stay with us.